This talk was given by Jeffrey Shugan Arnold Roshi at Zen Mountain Monastery. Shugan Roshi is the abbot of the monastery and the Zen Center of New York City. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you'd like to make a donation or find out more about our retreats and residency programs, visit our website at zmm.org. Thanks for listening.
This is from Master Dogen's 300 Koan Shoba Genzo, case 147. Linji's true person of no rank, the main case. Master Linji said to the assembly, "There is a true person of no rank. This person goes in and out of your senses, those who are beginners and have not yet had realization. Look, look." The commentary. The true person of no rank is the real form of truth as it appears throughout the universe. It's fluid and in a constant state of becoming. The true person of rank is the real form of truth as it appears throughout the universe. It too is fluid and in a constant state of becoming. Rank and no rank are non-dual. Therefore, each and everything up to and including each one of us exists thus. The essence of all phenomena is thusness. The real nature of body and mind is thusness. Therefore, it cannot be attained by any personal effort. Realized or not, it has always been manifesting as our very life itself. And the capping verse. It is at once you, yet you are not it. It must be understood in this way if you are to merge with suchness. There is a true person of no rank. Master Linji was a very important master in the 9th century China Zen tradition, and is one of the two main schools that still exist to this time, Rinzai in the Japanese pronunciation. And there are only a couple of koans in the traditional collections that involve Master Linji, which is kind of unusual or curious to me. In the traditionally Rinzai school, there would be teishos given on the teachings of Master Linji all the time, because there are a fair amount of recorded teachings of his. In our training, you know, Dai Roshi studied with Maizumi Roshi, who, while a Soto priest and having received Soto transmission, also studied with Yasutani Roshi and Koryu Roshi, who were both Rinzai masters, and so one ordained and one lay. And so he received the training of both of their lineages, which were different, and then trained his students, including Dada Roshi, in that training. And that's why the koans are an important part of our training in the way that they're taken up in the Rinzai school or Linji school, which is through meditation and bringing about direct insight. And some of the other aspects of our training are a sort of a blending of Soto and Rinzai practices. But this is one of his most well-known teachings and one of the koans that is most well-known because it's so compelling. There's a true person of no rank, a true person, someone without contrivance, without deception, without pretense, who doesn't want to be like this. Maybe there are some, but I think most of us want to be such a person, live such a life, be authentic. In fact, I think one of the greatest sources of regret in our lives can be from not living authentically, particularly if we know that. If we don't know it, then in a sense, we don't know how bad it is. But to be an authentic and to know that creates a kind of a tension, a conflict that really needs to be resolved by moving towards authenticity. But what is that? What is that? Master Linji says, there is a true person of no rank, true because they are free of rank. Dada Roshi, as in the sort of within the teachings of Master Dogen and the kind of emphasis of these koans in this collection shows then the other side. There is a true person of rank who is also the real form of truth. And so he takes this traditional teaching that the true person is one of no rank and says, yes, and the true person of rank is also the real form of truth. How do we understand this? So the middle way of Buddha Dharma is the great revolution, right? We all know how to live in one side or the other. You know, it's the power of a fundamentalist view. It's the power of living by a kind of dogma. In the six realms of existence teaching of Buddhism, it's part of the animal realm, just living out of a fixed rule, right? Adopt this, keep your head down, don't ask any questions, don't examine, just adhere to the rule. Of course, that doesn't work. It doesn't work for oneself, and it sure as hell doesn't work for the people around, right? Because the world is not like that. Reality is not like that. And so that means we're constantly, in our fixedness, coming up against and creating havoc within a world that is non-dual. And so to be free of the extremes of grasping and denial, of aggression and apathy, of self and other, of construction and destruction, to be free and unhindered within a physical, ever-changing world without being deceived by the physical and change. That's why the Buddha said, things are not as they seem, and nor are they otherwise. And so that truth demands that we go beyond our ordinary way of things. It demands that we go beyond thought and concept. And so in our ordinary lives, it's what we seek is, in a sense, very simple and very universal. Happiness, intimacy, purpose, equanimity. But how do we seek this? You know, we're concluding an introductory retreat, and so we've been talking about practice all weekend, and in a sense, talking about it as something that happens when you encounter the Dharma, or something that happens when you begin practicing within the Dharma. But in a certain sense, we've been practicing since the moment we gained consciousness. We've been thinking, speaking, and acting. We've been making choices, creating karma, responding to circumstances. We've been practicing something. And so how do we seek our happiness, our intimacy and purpose? Through acquisition, through protection, through defensiveness, through assault, through retreat. Master Linji one day said to the Sangha, when students today fail to make progress, where's the fault? The fault lies in the fact that they don't have faith in themselves. If you don't have faith in yourself, then you'll forever be in a hurry trying to keep up with everything around you. You'll be twisted and turned by whatever environment you're in, and you can never move freely. But if you can just truly rest this mind that goes rushing around moment by moment looking for something, then you'll be no different from the ancestors and the Buddhas. Do you want to know the ancestors and the Buddhas, the enlightened ones? They're none other than you, the people sitting in front of me, listening to this Taisho on the Dharma. This is what the Buddha realized. This is the fundamental teaching. This is what we all want to hear, in a sense. It's the good news. And it's all, in a very real sense, what we're terrified of hearing. You know, if the Buddha had said, there is an answer and it's over there, we'd all be there. If you just get this thing and hold on to it, don't let anybody take it, we'd all be enlightened. Right? Because that's what comes so easily. But that's not what the Buddha realized. The Buddha realized exactly what Linji is saying. That as we, not having faith, not trusting that this is Buddha, this is enlightened nature, as Dada Roshi says, It cannot be attained by any personal effort. Practice doesn't increase our enlightened nature. Delusion doesn't disturb it or diminish it. Realized or not, it has always been manifesting as our very life itself, moment by moment. In a sense, that's the greatest sadness of the Bodhisattva. You know, if the reality was that everybody's suffering, and sorry folks, there's nothing we can do about it, you know. But to realize that there is suffering and there is everything we are doing that is both creating that and also has the capacity to relieve ourselves of that and others, in a sense, is the greatest pain of all when that goes unmet. There is a true person of no rank, free of conditioned existence. When Bodhidharma said that Zen is a special transmission outside the scriptures, not relying on words and letters, words and phrases, concepts and meaning, that means ideas and concepts, beliefs, our titles, our relationships, our accomplishments and pleasures. It means everything we identify with, our possessions. And so we come into training having searched and searched and, you know, done due diligence to try and find what we're looking for out there. And on some level, beginning to see that's never actually going to work out. Doesn't mean we give up right in that moment, but something's starting to change. And we sit down and we turn around and start examining all of those many beings in the mind. And each one that appears, each aspect of the self, each desire, each clinging, each distraction, each daydream, in a sense, vies for our attention. Me, 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 me. Right? And we go, we get seduced, we run off, we jump on board until we begin to shift that, turn the light around. Because all of those things, all of those beings, all of those accomplishments and forms of identity, all those possessions, you can't keep them. Not a one. Everything that comes together will disperse. Everything that you hold in your hand, you will lose. And that's not a problem. It's not a mistake. It's the nature of things. It's what continually creates space, because it is space itself, for change. It's because of impermanence that we can be here. Dukkha, which is often spoken of as impermanence, the danger in our attachments being because they're impermanent, whatever they give us is impermanent. The Buddha said that's their danger. But impermanence or dukkha is just another way of saying that it's talking about our disappointment and not being able to control. To control the outcome, to control the past, the present, the future, to control each other, to control ourselves. And so we stop, as Master Churi said, we stop and see, stop and examine. And it's interesting, as I was reading Lin Ji's words, when we don't have faith in ourselves, we'll be in a hurry, trying to keep up with everything around, we'll be twisted and turned by whatever environment we're in. And I thought about that in relationship to our culture, which is constantly providing that chamber in which to turn and twist about and follow something, someone else's view, expertise, opinion, madness, promise, and that's really the stuff, the bloodline of tyrannies, you know, is to have the citizenry turn away from themselves, to stop examining, to stop thinking. But that's our nature. And that's why the Buddha said this is a path of inquiry. The only way we're going to free ourselves is through clear, skillful examination. And so we sit And so when something pleasurable arises, the practice is don't cherish it. Fall out of love with our enchantment of that, our excessive enchantment of that. When something that we don't like arises, don't resent it. Free ourselves of the insecurity and fear of being able to tolerate that. Don't accumulate, don't destroy. And so sometimes it can seem frustrating. Okay, all of these, don't do this, don't do this, don't do this. What am I supposed to do? When you don't do those things, you're it. You're right there. When we don't grasp and we don't deny, we're manifesting in that moment. Because the moment we say, do this, that just becomes another thing to attach to. That becomes something that now becomes rigid. That's the formula. And so can we trust the perfect simplicity of our basic mind, of each moment that arrives and departs without adding a speck of dust and without eliminating one grain of sand? Can we have that much trust? Can we want to develop that kind of trust? A late 19th, early 20th century Tibetan master, Barwe Dorje, spoke of it this way. Looking, you find a nothing. Like a water moon or a mirror's reflection, appearance emptiness and clarity emptiness are both indivisible. Rank and no rank are both indivisible, cannot be divided. This has been the mind's nature from the beginning. Don't engage in the intellect's spine. I love that. Like our intellect, our conceptual making mind is like a spy. It's always into intrigue. What's going on over there? What are you up to? I know. I know what you're thinking. I know what you're getting ready to do. I know what you think about me. Right? It's like trying to control the world. Spying. And we get so involved, right, in our ideas about what's going on everywhere. And then we get lost to ourselves. Don't engage in the intellect's spying. The experience of nothing to be done beyond the intellect. This is the authentic person. Nothing to be done. And this doesn't mean to be disinterested. It doesn't mean to be inactive. It means to understand that the essential nature of things is complete. Not seeing that, believing in the sense of a separate self, of a then inevitably that creates a kind of paradigm in the mind of brokenness. The world is broken. You're broken. I'm broken. Well, what do you do with things when they're broken? We fix them. Okay, so let's fix this mess. Right? And that's the same mind. Seeing the world that way is the same mind that sees the world as broken. And so seeing things as broken, we destroy them very often in our attempts to try and fix them. Why? Because we don't fully understand them. And not only just on the knowable level, but on the deepest level, we don't understand them. The experience of nothing to be done, you are already a Buddha, having enlightened nature, complete with all the virtues. You can't think your way into this. This is authenticity. This is the true person. Whatever occurs, Dorje says, rest in that state. Being without clinging and rejection is the practice that manifests that very state. I was listening to an interview with David White, who's an Irish poet, lives in the States, who describes himself as a Roman Catholic Buddhist, but doesn't like labels, so he don't call him that. and he's speaking about poetry, but I really liked what he had to say, and I thought it sort of tied in here. He says, I've often felt the deeper discipline of poetry, and we might think of this also as Zazen, the art of living, is overhearing yourself say things you didn't want to know about the world. Oops. And something that actually emancipates you from this smaller self out into this larger dispensation that you actually didn't think you deserved. And so one of the things we're most afraid of in silence is this death of the periphery. I love that. To think about how we live within the periphery of things, right? Why is it that we feel distant, that we feel like someone's here but not quite in this life, not quite living this life? We're afraid in our silence of the death of this periphery, those many outside concerns, the place where we've been building our personality and where we think we've been building who we are begins to atomize and come apart. Oh no. And so, of course, for all that within us that wants to keep hanging together, wants to keep holding on, keeps believing in finding our way that way, through accumulation, through control, through attachment, through self, we freak out. But for a practitioner, we keep returning to, keep remembering, reminding ourselves that that's not working. And so as we begin to see that which we've built all of our lives, beginning to be seen, atomized, be seen in all of its constituent parts and come apart, which really just means it's not that anything is coming apart. It's just that the sense of the construction is seen through. And we realize the construction is a construction itself. And so that's why Zazen becomes so amazing, so important, so compelling. It's like for a practitioner, it's almost like when we see a certain amount, Zazen becomes almost the mandate, not as in you should, but as in this is the only logical way in. Facing what is difficult to face, to begin to reveal what is hidden. And in that, the house begins to shake. Right? And Buddhism speaks in great detail about how don't be surprised when your house starts to shake. White goes on to say, this is one of the basic reasons we find it difficult even just to turn the radio off or the television or to not look at our thing, our gadget. Is that giving over to something that's going to actually seem as if it's undermining us to begin with and lead to our demise, a kind of a death? And the intuition, and this intuition, unfortunately, is correct. It is leading to a kind of a death. He says, you are heading toward your demise, but it's leading you towards a richer, deeper place that doesn't get corroborated very much in our everyday outer world. You could say that again. In fact, I would say it is very much not corroborated, and it's actually seen as strange and unpatriotic. This person of no rank, to forget the self, to let go and die to that, to those attachments, to die to those deep-seated beliefs, to those deep inclinations, those accumulated karmic tendencies, which really means just to allow, to continually allow us to cease constructing, to give up our spy work and just live directly, straightforwardly, eyes open. As Master Dogen said when he came back from China, what did he return with? Eyes horizontal, nose vertical. And to discover our ability to live within, to meet and be in harmony with the raw forces of our own human nature, of others' human natures, of nature itself, of humanity, of civilization, of the ineffable, of what is true, to actually allow ourselves to live with what is true. Can we do that? And so Lin Ji says, we must have faith. He's not kidding. There has to be faith in our capacity to do this, in the truth of this, to be able to experience the force of happiness, of joy, of love, of ease. Can we actually allow that? You know, I think all of us think, of course, when? I'm waiting. But then when it arrives, it's like, ah! And we revert back, we reach back for the tension, for the turbulence, for the buffer, the distraction. And so it's a continual process of stepping in and beginning and continually gaining confidence, developing that trust, developing our capacity to be patient and tolerate that discomfort, right? And don't underestimate, I think we shouldn't underestimate how deeply conditioned we have been to not be uncomfortable. As though it's a right, as though it's a natural thing or a possible thing to not be uncomfortable. As though when we experience discomfort, that means something's wrong. Fix it. Fix that thing. And quickly return to that state of comfort where then we can go to sleep again. Why is it that so often when we reflect on our lives that the places of greatest change, greatest transformation, greatest shift have been in the times of greatest discomfort? Now that can become a trap, right? That's sort of the base, you know, it can become a kind of ascetic life. That's not what Buddhism is teaching. Right? That ultimately, as we actually develop more faith and ease and serenity, that we are not only allow that, but allow that to deepen and strengthen, and don't go to sleep. Become more awake. White says, all human experience is mediated through loss and disappearance. All things are impermanent. And this is one of the reasons why we won't have a true conversation. He speaks a lot about true conversations. And I think we could really think about this in terms of, you know, what it means to sit and face our mind. It's a different kind of conversation, right? It's not carrying on a dialogue, but it's seeing, it's relating, it's meeting this. And he says, if you've had a really fierce loss, the loss of someone who's close to you, the loss of a mother, a father, a brother, a sister, a friend, or God forbid, a child, then human beings have every right to say, listen, God, if this is how you play the game, I'm not playing the game. I'm not playing by your rules. I'm going to manufacture my own little game, and I'm not going to come out of it. I'm going to make my own bubble, and I'm going to draw up the rules, and I'm not coming out to this place again. I don't want to. I want to create insulation. I want to create distance. I will find my comfort. I will soothe my fear there. And of course, we can all identify that with that. And to some degree, we all know that that's a lie. That is not the life of a true person. That is not authentic. It cannot work. And in fact, the cost of trying to do that is immense. And so he says one of the great questions, theological questions, is around incarnation, which simply means being here in your body, not anywhere else, just here, with life's fierce need to change you. And the fact that the more you're here and the more you're alive, the more you realize you are a mortal human being, an impermanent, ineffable, fleeting thing, and that you'll pass from this place. So now, will you actually turn up? Will you actually have the conversation given that it's so? Will you become a full citizen of vulnerability, of loss, and disappearance, loss, which you have no choice about? This is what the Buddha realized: sickness, old age, death. We have no choices about those things. We have every kind of choice about how we understand them, how we meet them, how we live into them. What is your body? What is living here? What is alive? What does it mean to turn up? I was thinking about Myotai Sensei, my Dharma sister, and she used to talk a lot about showing up. She said, just show up. What does she mean by that? Did she mean just walk through the door? Just get yourself on the cushion? Well, that's where it starts. But then you got to show up again. What does it mean to turn up and become a full citizen? A Buddha, a Bodhisattva, an enlightened being of vulnerability, loss, impermanence. To let go, and to let go some more. To let go of letting go. That's why we say in the Zen tradition, if you meet the Buddha on the road, kill the Buddha. Right? A dramatic, startling way of saying, go beyond fixedness, grasping, any place where we might try to find that bubble, that place where I'm going in, I'm not coming out. You know, it's important to have, it's like presented, it's like, You know, Buddhism is pretty good about that. Just puts it right in our face. And when I first encountered that, that was like, oh my God, it was like elixir. You know, even though it was difficult to encounter, difficult to hear, it was like, I have been waiting for this. Right? For that voice, for that consciousness, for that understanding that is willing to say it like it is. And not just put it in my face and say, it sucks, sorry. You're on your own. But say, this is the way it is, and this is a path. This is the way it is, and it's not what you think it is. There is a way in. There is a way with. And so this true person of no rank, free of age and time, place, concern, past and future. So this is going to the sacred mountain and realizing the fundamental nature of self, empty of permanence, empty of anything that we can call me, empty of anything that is distinct and different from anything that we could call you. And you can put anything you want in that place of you. An object, an idea, something of the past, something of your mind. And in going to that sacred mountain and realizing that self-nature, in that moment we realize we haven't taken a step. We realize we have not changed anything. It's not about changing that which is. It's about realizing the nature of what we call is. That's why Dada Roshi said, the essence of all things is thusness. The real nature of body and mind is thusness. This very moment, free of all dualities. The real person of no rank is the real form of truth, fluid and in a constant state of becoming. And then we continue the journey into the world of the 10,000 things so that we can meet knowingly and without obstruction rank, age, time, past, future. The true person of rank is the real form of truth, appearing throughout the universe, fluid and in a constant state of becoming. You and I are the same thing, as Dada Roshi used to say all the time. And yet, I'm not you and you're not me. How can that exist simultaneously as one entity? Not even harmonious. Harmony is the lack of conflict between two things. This is not two things. This very moment is itself free of contrivance, is itself true, is itself authentic. Practice is about just continually allowing that to be experienced, to be seen, to know beyond knowing, beyond delusion and deception, free of sorrow, indifference, so that we can turn up, show up. Now. David White says, there's no self that will survive a real conversation. There's no organization that will keep its original identity if it is in a true conversation. This is very true. You know, it's funny, we come into practice wanting to transform our lives and keep everything the same, right? Because when things start to change, it's like, not that. And so patience, forbearance, courage, faith. There is no self that will survive a genuine encounter. Because in the moment when we start seeing, I mean, it's like true knowledge. I mean, even in the realm of the conceptual, when we begin to learn that, you know, history is a story that some people have told about certain people's lives. It's not the story. And then we begin to see that the stories that weren't told, the secrets that were hidden, right? The motives behind actions, the true motives. And things are not the same, right? Countries, governments, people, groups, systems. When we begin to see ourselves as we actually are, that story, right, creates something new. We are not who we thought we were, right? But as he says, that opens us up into something much more rich, much more liberating. We are liberated from the story. And not so that we can now tell a true story, but so we can just stop telling stories. And when we can stop telling stories, then we can enjoy stories. When we wake up from the dream, then we can appreciate the dream. And so to turn the light around and experience the deep solitude of this conversation, this encounter. So I want to finish with a poem by David White that I think brings this home. Everything is waiting for you. Your great mistake is to act the drama as if you were alone. Your great mistake is to act the drama as if you were alone. As if life were a progressive and cunning crime with no witness to the tiny hidden transgressions. To feel abandoned is to deny the intimacy of your surroundings. Surely even you at times have felt the grand array, the swelling presence, and the chorus crowding out your solo voice. You must note the way the soap dish enables you, or the window latch grants your courage. Alertness is the hidden discipline of familiarity. Alertness is the hidden discipline of familiarity. The stairs are your mentor of things to come. The doors have always been there to frighten you and invite you. And the tiny speaker in the phone is your dream ladder to divinity. The tiny speaker in your phone is the dream ladder to divinity. Put down the weight of your aloneness and ease into this conversation. The kettle is singing, even as it pours you a drink. The cooking pots have left their arrogant aloofness, and seen the good in you at last. All the birds and creatures of the world are unutterably themselves. Everything, everything, everything is waiting for you. We might say, everything, everything, everything is nothing but you.
Thanks so much for listening. To find out more about the monastery's programs, weekend retreats, and residency, please visit our website at cmm.org.